the tweet that I'm talking about, that I'm bringing up, Kyprios, I hope I pronounced.
Kyprios.
Yeah, Kyprios. He said, "I am now more in belief that Sidney Crosby will be traded. If they're really bad, the likelihood he's traded after the Olympics grows." Elliot Friedman goes, "I've wondered about that. I completely agree with you. The only one thing people argue with me about is he's such a creature of habit. You want to trade him in season." That was from the Real Kuiper and Bourne podcast. Welcome to the Checking From Behind podcast. I'm your host, Zach, as always, joined by my co-host, Preston. We're in the middle of the offseason. It's completely dead, but we have some news to go over. We all know, we talked about it in the last episode, the Bowen-Byram saga, I guess you can call it, where the Sabres took him to arbitration, but they finally agreed on a new contract. A $2 million by $6.5 million contract with the Buffalo Sabres. Again, they avoid the arbitration hearing. And at this point, it feels like, hey, we don't have to worry about what the contract's going to be. Are the Sabres going to end up trading him? I mean, if he were going to be traded, it would have been probably by free agency at the complete latest. And right now, it feels like the Sabres roster, especially their blue line, seems completely set for the upcoming season.
Yeah, I mean, this conclusion is not really shocking. You know, after they were going to trade him, I've been saying for a while, if they don't trade him, like for what they want, don't just trade him to trade him. Mm-hmm. Like, you're better team with him on your team. I wouldn't rule out a trade still.
Yeah,
I think the rumors are gonna like die down a lot because he's under contract now, and I don't think the Sabres are gonna be as aggressive in shopping for him. But I still think, especially now that he has a contract, it's a very tradable deal at 6.5 for 2 years. It walks into UFA, which is an important note for this contract. This isn't probably too different from what he would have gotten in arbitration. I mean, it's just better just to avoid it altogether, just to put an end to it. But yeah, I think this is a win for Bowen-Byram. I think it's a win for the Sabres for now. You know, I still wouldn't rule out a trade, especially, you know, come this season, if the Sabres aren't in a great spot, you know, around the trade deadline. I could see teams being very interested in Bowen-Byram, especially if he's having a decent season, you know, playing. I'm assuming they're going to try to prop him up still and probably lock him on a pair with Dahlin as much as they can now that Owen Power has what we think should be a more consistent partner in Michael Kesselring. So, yeah, I think this is just a good deal. We can finally take the drama out of it, and people can finally shut up about it.
Yeah, I look at this as, I always thought that Bowen-Byram, if he wasn't going to sign here long-term, that he was just going to want to be walked to UFA. And I know the one-year contract got brought up about betting on yourself then getting another contract. But the only issue I had with that was he'd still be stuck with Buffalo for another year with his rights. So why do that when you know that both parties are unsure if they really want to commit to each other long-term? And this isn't a situation like we've mentioned many times where Bowen-Byram's like, okay, I don't really want to speak to you guys. Like, I don't want to be here. It's just like, hey, like, whatever happens, happens. It's a business, like,
well,
we've said.
I think it was just more so he wanted to get paid. From what I was hearing and what he was asking for, I don't think he was ever going to get.
No.
You know, he's a good player, and I still think he can get better. I know he's about like 23, 24 now.
24, I think.
Yeah, he's 24, 25. I think he's turning 25 soon. So he's still on a younger side of a player. I wouldn't necessarily rule out the long-term extension with the Sabres either. If the Sabres are better than people expect them to be and Byram's great, you know, he never expressed interest in wanting to leave Buffalo. It was just, I want to get paid what I feel I'm worth, you know, and this two-year contract's smart because he's still getting a raise at 6.5. He's going to get a chance to play on a top pair with Rasmus Dahlin for most of the season.
Yeah.
And he's going to have a chance in a couple years if he keeps playing better to get a huge payday in 2027. So I think this is a smart deal for the player and the team. Yeah, I don't really see any issues with this. Just that it took this long to get to this point is my issue.
Yeah, I don't like the fact that it took this long and it took the Sabres going to arbitration. I mean, good news for the Sabres is that Byram didn't elect for arbitration. So obviously, if the player felt like he didn't need to go to arbitration, he felt like things were headed in the right direction. Mm-hmm. This isn't a fucking Don Sweeney and Jeremy Swayman situation last year where neither of them elected for arbitration. Everybody's like, oh, we're close to a deal, and it took right until 2 weeks before.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong on the Swayman thing, but he never really changed what he was asking for, did he? He wanted an 8-year deal at 8.5.
The Bruins were lowballing. They're like, yeah, we'll stick with like 6, 6.5. And Swayman's like, are you fucking out of your mind?
For an 8-year deal, that's ridiculous. It is. I would get it if it was like a 4 or 5 year deal, but yeah, on a long term deal, you have to live. The team has to live with having a little bit of a higher cap hit because over time, you know, it's going to become less and less because the cap going up. That's just how it is with 8 year deals.
Yeah.
They don't look amazing at the first signing, but if the player plays well, they age gracefully.
And everybody in the media and covering the NHL is like 8x8, screaming at their faces. Yeah. And the Bruins are
It was so obvious.
And then it came at 8x8. I'm like, oh my God. Going back to the Byram stuff,
yeah.
A couple quotes from his press conference, like post-contract extension, whatever, re-signage. Byram said that he's been personally happy with his time in Buffalo. I think I've mentioned it before that I've gotten an opportunity to play a bigger role and play more minutes, whether it's the offensive side, power play, or penalty kill. So with him wanting to be a number one defenseman, of course, he wants more playing time, and it feels like he's happy with his playing time in Buffalo right now, which is a good sign if you're the Sabres organization. And I'm expecting him to get a little bit of a bigger role, and obviously Dahlin's the number one guy. And honestly, this season could be where Power and Byram are the 2A, 2B situation, where I think it's been like that for a while.
I'm more so curious about the power play, because last year on the Sabres power play, it might change a little bit now that J.J. Paterka's out of the picture. They might roll with a second defenseman on that top unit, because JJ would usually play wing and Tage would play on the point. Now that, you know, JJ's gone, you might move Tage back to forward and just have like Byram out there with Dahlin on the power play one, because Dahlin was the power play one quarterback and then Power was power play two. So Byram didn't really get a lot of power play time. He did get a lot. They all played penalty kill and I thought he was fine there. But yeah, I expect him to probably get a little bit more of a role look on the power play this year for the Sabres.
I think it would be an interesting sight to try it in training camp and preseason. See if Dahlin and Byram work on that first power play unit, because they work even strength together so well.
Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't Byron be happy to be like on a pair with Rasmus Dahlin? Most defensemen in the league would be ecstatic to be playing with a guy like that every night.
I mean, Byron doesn't even have to do any. Okay, I don't want to say that. He doesn't have to do too much. Dahlin does what he wants. Byron does what he wants, and they work well, and that's what worked well. Let's hop over to the Lucas Dalstal contract as well. $5 million by $6.5 million with the Ducks. He's 25 years old. This takes him up to the age of 30. I like this for both parties. I think that the 6.5 is great for not only the Ducks, but also Dalstal. I think Dalstal, he had a good season last year. Of course, we all know he got off to the ridiculous hot start. He cooled off a little bit, ended with the save percentage just above 900, I think around 903, 905. But overall, expected. I would have liked if you're the Ducks to drag it out to 6 years. But again, 5 years is much better than being like, here's 2x6.5, and now he has a chance to walk in free agency in a couple of years.
Yeah, I think this is a good deal for the player and the team. Another thing you got to remember with these Anaheim goaltenders, like John Gibson last year too, I know they ended up moving on from him, is that blue line in Anaheim isn't the greatest.
It's really young, or they have a couple of aging vets.
Yeah, they have Jacob Trouba and Radko Gudas, but other than that, like, those are the two older guys, and the rest of the guys are all under 25 years old.
They're still developing. They're still figuring out their game, and I like their potential on the blue line, but I like that point where you brought up where the blue line right now is not the greatest, but come another 2 seasons, 3 seasons, it could be one of the best in the league if everything pans out.
Yeah, and like Dostal put up good numbers last year despite the bad defense. Honestly, you know, I'm a Ducks hater. I don't really hate them. It's just I kind of play it up. But I think they've had a really good offseason, to be honest with you. I think a lot of people have forgotten that they brought in why can't I remember Brandon? His name? No, the coach, Joel Quenneville.
Oh, yeah.
And if anyone, I think he can be a veteran voice for them. You know, I'm not sure he just like has that old school mentality. You know, but guys in Chicago loved him, and he was doing really well in Florida before he had to step down for a bunch of various reasons. Mm-hmm. But you know, the forward core got a lot older this offseason. You know, they bring in Mikael Granlund, which I'm still surprised that he signed there. I mean, but they're paying him $7 million a
and
year
in California.
Yeah, I don't know how many teams were going to give him that much money in the free agent market. I don't know, that long of a deal. You know, bring in Chris Kreider. We'll see if he can bounce back. He might be on the decline. The Alex Killorn contract's still horrible at 6.25. Like they have an interesting mix of veteran and young forwards. You know, they end up moving Trevor Zegras, but I still really like Mason McTavish, and I think Leo Carlson can be really good. I thought Carter Gauthier also had a pretty solid rookie year.
I see Verbeek's vision with the forward group where, okay, you have young guys that have a ton of potential, but we got to add some vets in there because you could take the route of some of these other teams like Detroit, or I guess, I mean, not really Detroit. They have a bunch of vets, but like maybe like in Ottawa or like a Buffalo where, okay, we have a bunch of young guys where the average age is like 26 years old. Let's just fucking ride with potential. And it worked with Ottawa because they got an elite goaltender in Allmark, and I think Dalso will be an elite goaltender at one point. Maybe a hot take for some. Don't know. Don't really,
really
care.
It's a hot take. I think as that blue line gets better and they get more experienced, I think, you know, his numbers are already pretty good despite like the not great defense. And as that blue line gets better, and I think Quenneville will kind of preach a defense-first mentality.
I think the Ducks are going to be an interesting team this season. I don't know where I'd place them in terms of in the standings right now, but I'm looking at them like they can either be this 85, 88-point team and take that another step, or they can regress a little bit and be like, here's 76 points for you.
Yeah, no, they're definitely an interesting case right now. I think they're kind of at a crossroads now in their rebuild where, you know, you don't bring in all these veteran players and make all these moves if as a GM if you don't feel like your team is ready to take the next step. And Pat Pavrika said his expectation this year is for the Ducks to make the playoffs. I don't know about that. The Central Division is kind of stacked. And, you know, can they edge out a team like St. Louis, Minnesota, Winnipeg? Like, there's a bunch of teams in that conversation in the Central that are going to be likely wild card teams. Are they better than those
like
teams?
You have the six teams in the Central, plus you have to compete with three other in the Pacific Division.
Obviously, well, yeah, I don't see the Ducks being a top three team in the Pacific. They're definitely not better than Vegas or Edmonton or LA.
Yeah.
So I think the ceiling for Anaheim going into the series like a dark horse wild card team. I expect them to be competitive though. Like I don't think they're going to be like a lottery team.
I'm with you on that. I'm not expecting this team to completely lay an egg and be the Ducks that they were two, three seasons ago, where they're just one of the worst teams in the league. I expect them to take some strides, and it all relies on the young guys. Plus, can the older vets not only help guide them along the way, but also contribute on the score sheet?
Yeah, because you're taking a risk bringing in a guy like Chris Kreider, who had a horrible year in New York. I don't think there's going to be nearly as much pressure on him in Anaheim, which I think will help. You know, that New York spotlight's a very real thing. And Anaheim, nobody really ever talks about the Ducks. A lot of people, I always forget that the Ducks exist until I see those hideous jerseys. And then I go like, oh, yeah, they're a team. Yeah. Well, because they're also so close to L.A., too. Like, they're kind of like second fiddle to the Kings.
Yeah, you have the Kings on a pedestal, and Anaheim's like right here, too, like looking up at
them.
Some more news coming out of Toronto. The Maple Leafs acquired Josh Dakota for a 2028 fourth round pick, a complete cap dump for the Canucks. What's up, Dakota Joshua? Did I say Josh Dakota?
Yeah.
All right. Whatever. You guys fucking get the point. Dakota Joshua. I don't know why. Either way, yeah, complete cap dump for the Canucks. There have been talks for the last probably 10 days or so leading up to this trade that the Canucks were shopping him, looking to get rid of that contract. And the contract isn't necessarily bad, but the Canucks needed the cap space. And after a a very good postseason run in the 22-23 season, they paid him, and now we're here. He's on the Maple Leafs, and I feel like it's a decent ad for the Leafs.
Yeah, he's a very physical forward. I think he's kind of that player they envisioned Ryan Reeves being when they acquired him a few years ago. I can't believe they got something from San Jose for Ryan Reeves.
What'd they get for him?
They got like a decent defenseman prospect, maybe like a seventh round pick or something. I know they at least got a pretty decent prospect
instead
defenseman.
Of future cash.
Yeah, just to get rid of a horrible
whatever
contract.
That was.
Yeah. I think Dakota Joshua has a really high chance of being a bounce back player this year. He had a bad year at Vancouver. Mm-hmm. He had 14 points in 57 games. He's gonna plug right probably in that fourth line role in Toronto, and I think he will be a real difference maker, especially come playoff time. I think he's the kind of guy that thrives in the playoffs. I think that's why you saw like him have that great playoff run a couple years ago, where you know he had 8 points in 13 games, and also a couple years ago when he was in the AHL, for the Seattle Thunderbirds, Springfield Thunderbirds. I'm sorry, I don't know why I said Seattle.
You're fine.
In 18 games, he had 15 points. So he's a guy that based on stats, shows up in the playoffs, and he's a guy Toronto would absolutely need in the playoffs for a deep run.
He can contribute to your lineup night in and night out. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why he's making $3.5 million.
I mean, the contract's a little much for like a bottom six guy, but he's a power forward. He's a very physical player, and you know, you, that's the kind of guy you want in the playoffs. And, you know, I kind of saw moves like this happening with Toronto, you know, when Mitch Marner is no longer the team, that frees up so much money to kind of address your depth. So I think this is I don't think this is a bad move for Toronto. Honestly, I think, you know, the Canucks just looking to, I don't know what the Canucks are doing right now. I don't think they have a plan, really. Because you look at, they're such a mess, man. Like, they're lucky that Brock Besser decided to stay there, because if they would have left, they would have been screwed. They would have lost so much scoring.
Not only do you lose so much scoring, now you have a Quinn Hughes who's like, what the fuck is going on? You have an Elias Pettersson who clearly doesn't have any confidence the last 12 to 15 months. And overall,
there's going to be a lot of pressure on Pettersson this year to bounce back.
You know what I don't get? That is true. You know what I don't get? The Canucks were like, we want to move Dakota Joshua for a cap dump, but then you take on all of Evander Kane's contract.
They see Evander Kane as his replacement. Because, I mean, Evander Kane's also kind of a power forward kind of guy. He was decent for the Oilers until he forgot how to play hockey in the Stanley Cup final. Mm-hmm. But like I can't believe they gifted Edmonton that by just taking on that whole contract and giving up an asset for it. Because almost, I think, any other team, if you were going to take that Evander Kane contract, Edmonton would have to throw in something.
Either throw in something or be like, you hold on to 50% of that shit. Because don't want the entire thing. And Vancouver is like, yeah, we'll take. Dude, Vancouver's such a mess. Like, if you would have said something even last summer, it's like, yeah, in a year from now, you're going to be talking about Vancouver as they might have to blow it up sooner rather than later. Be like, are you fucking out of your mind?
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, they had that crazy year a few years ago when they won the Pacific Division. They almost made it to the conference final, one game away.
I'm still convinced that they had Besser in Game 7. They could have. I mean, it's all what-if games. But
still. Yeah, we could talk about that till the end of time. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be really interesting. I don't think Vancouver's a bad team. I don't think if they make they could make the playoffs.
There's a lot of pressure on them, I think.
I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Pettersson. A lot of pressure on him. And they had a chance to get out of that deal. He has a full no movement clause now, so he cannot be traded without his permission. Last year did not. They were shopping him. They were shopping him and JT Miller. They decided to just move Miller, not Pettersson, which I think was probably the better move.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say about Vancouver that hasn't already been said. Like, I think, like,
fucking blow it up. There we go.
I think their ceiling is a wild card team, like kind of like Anaheim. I think Anaheim's at a better spot though, because, you know, they're younger. They're still building, and Vancouver's like, this is what we got.
I don't know if this is a crazy hot take. I'm not gonna say something outrageous, but there's a chance in time where we see the Vancouver Canucks regress a little bit more and finish like sixth in the Pacific Division.
Because realistically speaking, so like, let's say Vancouver does sneak into the playoffs and like they're a wild card team. Let's just say like Vegas wins the Pacific and I don't know, Dallas wins the Central. Do you think they could even like take them to six?
It's 4-0.
Yeah,
it's 4-0.
I don't know if they get swept, but they're not winning that series. No. Unless Edmonton like has a really, or LA has a really disappointing year and doesn't finish in the top three spot in the Pacific, and Vancouver somehow sneaks into it, but I don't know if they can beat LA or Edmonton in a 7-game series either. No. I think those teams are just way better. They're on a different level than the Canucks.
If
right
the
now.
Vancouver Canucks were somehow to make the playoffs, I think they're the worst team in the playoffs.
Yeah, they're probably the wild card, too.
If there are any Canucks fans listening or watching, we don't mean to keep shitting on you guys, but like, it's hard not to, because
it's got
to
be frustrating.
Yeah.
Because you make it to the second round a couple years ago, you win the division, you like, Pettersson has arrived, you know, JT Miller is great. Because there was a lot of eyeballs raised when they signed him to that big extension, where they were like looking to trade him, and then an 8-year deal for him. And then he was playing really well, and that whole thing last year happened where they just had to move on from it.
Hopefully it's a fresh slate this season.
If Quinn Hughes asks for a trade, though, they got to blow it up.
It's over.
Yeah.
You're trading everybody. And, yeah, it's going to be tough for Vancouver if that happens. The last bit of our quick hitters, Chinnikov asked for a trade out of Columbus. The reasoning, he just doesn't see eye to eye with Dean Evason. He isn't a big fan of him. They've been butting heads all season last year. And in 30 games, he had 15 points, which for a 24-year-old, that plays 15 minutes a night, I think that's pretty solid. But right now, the Canucks did come out and say that they don't feel pressured to trade him. He is expected to report to training camp, according to the Blue Jackets themselves.
Yeah. So my understanding was like a dispute over ice time.
Okay.
he was a healthy scratch a bunch last year. I'm not sure how many of those games he missed to injury. But, I mean, it's a very tradable contract, 2.1. Then he's RFA. So a team you had listed that I think could be very interested is the Edmonton Oilers that, you know, need anybody that can really contribute to their offense at low salary cap hits. They might have to give up a little bit more than another team would just because teams know the situation they're in and they're going to take advantage of it. But also for Columbus's side, yeah, they don't have no pressure to trade him.
No, just because somebody requests a trade doesn't mean you have to honor it right away.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like it's like, okay, we have 2 weeks to trade him. Like,
it's not like he's a pending UFA and they're risking losing him for nothing or anything like that. He's an RFA. They have his rights. He's 24 for 3 more years.
They can wait till fucking Christmas if they wanted to until they feel like they have the right deal for him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to rush. I don't think he's going to get traded this summer. I think he's going to be on the team opening night.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? Maybe they figure it out and they have an internal talk. It's like, we can see what we can do. But also, you don't want to be like, okay, here's a lineup. You're in the lineup every single night. And it's like, you don't know if he feels worthy to be in the lineup every night now.
I don't think Dean Evason's that kind of guy where he's just going to like, oh, you're not getting enough ice time here. You can play more.
Yeah.
Because clearly, if they were butting heads, that's not how he operates. And I think that pissed Chinnikov off. He's like, I want to play more. And Evason's like, earn it.
Yeah. You got to earn it, though. Mm-hmm. Like, that's professional sports. Everybody's competing for a job. And like, you can have a 13th forward. Let's say you have 13 and 14 forwards. So you have 14 forwards on the roster, two of them scratched, whatever. And now those two are competing for the 11th, the 12th spot. And if one of those two guys isn't playing up to how the team likes them, okay, we're taking you out of the lineup, we're inserting somebody else. And if they play good, they have the job. It's just how it works in professional sports. And maybe Chinnikov, he feels like he's working as hard as he can. I don't know, but I don't like the excuse of being like, yeah, I'm not getting enough ice time, so I want out. It's like you're 24, you're still an RFA. Well, you're not a pending RFA, sorry. You have 3 more years left on your contract.
No,
like,
this is the RFA next year.
He's an RFA. Okay,
yeah, so I'm just thinking they had control for 3 more years over his rights.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of Chinnikov being like, yeah, I want fucking out because I'm not playing
enough. I mean, there will be a lot of teams interested in him, young forward. I think still has upside, you know, because in those 30 games he played last year, he had 15 points. So, you know,
maybe he feels like he can contribute more if he plays more. And it's a possibility, too. If he plays an entire 82 game season, he's getting 40 plus points. So,
yeah, because the most games he's ever played in a season was his rookie season, 2021-22. He played 62 games, only 14 points. Yeah, so we'll see. I think he does need to get on the ice some more. I think that would help his case to trade him. I think that would also help Columbus's case too. Like, okay, well, you're playing now, we can get more for you.
Maybe that happens where he starts playing more, he produces, now the Blue Jackets can get more for him. Don't know. I mean, we'll just see what happens in the developing situation. Quick time out before we get back to the episode, you beauties. As someone like myself who's into fitness and needs a little bit of an extra boost before a lift, or maybe I need just a little bit of energy before my next hockey game, and even when doing pod stuff to bring you guys the best content possible, W always has me covered. Whether you needed to stay awake at work or need a little bit of a jolt to get you through the day, W will always provide you that spark you need. There's no sugar, no crash, no artificial flavors or artificial dyes, just flavored caffeine. 150 milligrams of caffeine in one serving, which is equivalent to 2 cups of coffee. Make sure to head over to W.GG and use code CFBPOD for 10% off any order. Let's hop into our main topics of today's episode. The Pittsburgh Penguins, they've been kind of active this offseason. Kyle Dubas has kind of been trying to reconstruct this roster in a way. They go out and acquire Matt Dumba, and Malkin is most likely done this season. And there's also been rumors about Erik Karlsson. Maybe he's out, not this summer, but possibly next summer when he's entering the last year of his deal. And also, something got brought up, that there is a belief, according to Friedman, that if the Penguins are really bad come the Olympics, that he could be traded after the Olympics closer to the trade deadline this season. And I should specify, Friedman didn't come right out of his mouth, but he was talking to someone on some like podcast or whatever, and then Friedman says, I totally agree with you.
Yeah, I wouldn't take any Sidney Crosby rumors serious like that, unless like a guy like Elliot Friedman kind of didn't dismiss him. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not adding to the rumors. He's just saying, I could see it happening.
Yeah.
Which he's one of the very few credible sources. Like, I believe almost anything that he says. So
the tweet that I'm talking about, that I'm bringing up, Kiprios. Yeah, Kiprios. He said, I am now more in belief that Sidney Crosby will be traded. If they're really bad, the likelihood he's traded after the Olympics grows. Elliot Friedman goes, I've wondered about that. I completely agree with you. The only one thing people argue with me about is he's such a creature of habit. Do you want to trade him in season? That was from the Real Kuiper and Born podcast.
Yeah, I mean, the way he's talking like there sounds like, yeah, they're going to trade him. It's just, when do you want to, when would be the best time? Because, you know, he is kind of a psychopath when it comes to his routines. He's kind of insane. Man, it would be crazy. It would just blow my mind to see Sidney Crosby ever traded. I know he's getting older, but still, it would be like, can you imagine seeing him in a different jersey? It would be so, so weird.
Hell nah. Hell no. It's going to feel like the Brad Marchand. Honestly, it'll feel worse than the Brad Marchand.
Oh, yeah. It'll be way, way worse. It'll be like if, you know, like they swapped Ovi and Crosby. And like Crosby wearing a Capitals jersey. You're like, no. No. I don't want to see this.
It's so fucked up. And the nutty thing is, Crosby right now is so an elite player in this league. Mm-hmm. They get so much back for him.
It'd be very reasonable cap hit. 8.7 for this year. This is the last year of his deal, I believe. No, he has one more year.
Yeah.
This is the first year of his 2-year extension. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you get at least another year of Sidney Crosby at $8.7 million. I think Pittsburgh's even in a spot where they could even retain half of that salary if it adds more to the trade, because you still will get a king's ransom for Sidney Crosby. Even though he's 37 years old, you're still going to get a lot for him because he's still a great player.
How many contracts are they retaining right now?
They have an open spot.
They have an open spot? Because the only thing that I'm wondering is, let's say they go out and they trade Crosby at 50% retained, right? But then if you plan on trading Carlson, you don't have another spot to retain.
I think they have three open spots.
They have three open spots?
Yeah, they're not retaining salary on anybody right now. So that, realistically, if they wanted to, they could trade Crosby, Malkin, and Carlson.
Fucking blow it up.
And retain salary on all three.
And you trade Rakell and Rust. You can, dude, those...
You could get a team to take all of, like, Rust's contract. Raquel will have a big market, too. Only $5 million cap hit. Yeah. Pittsburgh, I think, is going to be really bad next year.
We're talking Sharks, Blackhawks-esque.
I don't know. I don't know if Sidney Crosby will let them be that bad.
I'm talking about, like, if they trade, like, everybody.
Oh, if they trade Sidney Crosby, just him, that team's, all, like, bottom three in the league.
Yeah. If Crosby's still on the team for his remainder of the contract, they're not going to be that bad until he's gone.
Because it also puts the team at a tough spot for the rebuild. Because, you know, imagine you're Kyle Dubas, right?
Mm-hmm.
You take the GM of the Pittsburgh Penguins. You see the writing on the wall. We have all these aging players on bad and very high cap hit contracts. We don't really have any money to spend because we don't have any cap space. We don't have any draft picks because, you know, the guys that had the job before me would go all in every year trading first round picks, and they're decent prospects, you know, to keep it going a little bit longer. We need to recuperate assets, but then you see, you have a guy like Sidney Crosby, and he's like, well, I can't be a bad team and have him. I can't like commit to this rebuild fully with Sidney Crosby.
I think that is the complete thinking of Dubas.
Mm-hmm.
Dubas knows this team needs to be in a rebuild. Like, they should have started last season,
mm-hmm.
but he's like, we have fucking Sidney Crosby. Like, we can't commit to a full rebuild and be like, go to Crosby when he's 37 years old at the time and be like, yeah, we're going to be bad for the next 5 years, so you can either be traded or just stick with us. And obviously, it's not fair to him, Letang.
I truly do believe that Crosby does want to finish his career as a Pittsburgh Penguin. I think that was always his goal,
mm-hmm.
and I think it was really important for him to do it with Malkin. I don't see the Pens being interested in re-signing Malkin, even if it's for a one-year deal just to keep Sidney Crosby happy. It's just, at this point, what's the point?
I've heard that Malkin's in his last year at the Penguins, and you brought it up, I think, when we were talking about the figure out what we're going to talk about in the episode, where Malkin, there's a chance that if next year he doesn't feel like the market is that well, he just goes back to the KHL and just plays.
Oh, he'd be a god in Russia in the KHL.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be like when Datsyuk went back, like... Yeah, he's Russian royalty pretty much there. One of the best Russian players of all time.
The one thing about the Penguins that really gets me is, A, I feel like Kyle Dubas just got put in a tough spot right away. And
I don't think he's doing a bad job.
No, he's doing what he can and what he's been given from Hextall. But two, they're in a spot where this, if you blow it up right now, if you were to blow it up right now, I think that's in their best interest. Again, like we've talked about 6 million times, the only thing holding them back is Crosby. But let's say you don't have Crosby. You can blow it up and trade Kyle. You can trade Russ. You can 50% retain on Carlson. And I think the only... I don't know what the market is like for Erik Karlsson right now. And also, we haven't mentioned this yet. Tristan Jarry contract, fucking brutal, man.
That was probably the worst move he's made since he came in as a GM. Was
did,
giving,
did he sign Ryan Graves?
Yeah, him and Graves are the two worst decisions that...
I think Jarry is the worst one, though.
Yeah, these Graves plays.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, he's not being sent down to the AHL.
Yeah, it's not that bad.
Yeah, I mean, last year he had 61 games, 1 goal, 3 assists, minus 15, averaging 15 minutes of ice a night.
15 minutes time on ice as a defenseman. I mean, third pair.
Oh, that's bottom pair, and you're minus 15. I mean, the goaltending, Pittsburgh might have had the worst goaltending in the league last year. Like them and San Jose and Chicago. Oh, Chicago's actually wasn't that bad, all things considered. But San Jose's goaltending was so bad, and yet Pittsburgh was definitely bottom three.
It was brutal. And I want to go back to the Carlson stuff here real quick, because I don't know what his market was, if they've actively been shopping him this entire time. But a couple off seasons ago, Crosby wants to go out and get Carlson because he made available after that 100-point season.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, he put so much pressure on Kyle Dubas to get that deal done.
And he got it done, and you give him the contract, but it's just like he hasn't, outside of offensively, because he's been good offensively for the Penguins, don't get me wrong, and you didn't bring him in for the defense stuff, but I think the hesitancy to trade Carlson because Crosby told you to go out and get him. And that's another thing where Dubas is kind of walking like a fine line right now, because you come in, I get you have a superstar in Crosby, but at the end of the day, maybe you just say fuck it and I don't know, trade him.
Well, you can't trade any of these players because they all have full non-movement clauses.
Yeah, I forgot
so
about that.
You have to have a very uncomfortable conversation with Sidney Crosby about his future in the organization. Because, mm-hmm. I think even getting permission from ownership to trade Sidney Crosby would be really hard, because he just means so much to the city and the fans. And, you know, you still have to sell tickets. And, you know, people are coming to see Sidney Crosby play, and they trade him, and the fans are heartbroken, they're angry. Like, it has a ripple effect on the whole organization. It's just a really hard move to make.
If it does come to a point where Kyle Dubas, ownership, and Crosby have a conversation, you brought up a good point. If you're ownership, you don't want to trade Crosby, because honestly, it's taking money out of your pockets. Mm-hmm. Just like we're talking millions and millions of dollars.
Oh, he's
out
still
of your
a top seller jersey in the league. Like, people go to see Sidney Crosby. Like when the Sabres play Pittsburgh, I make a point to go to that game because I want to see Sidney Crosby play, because he's just that good.
Yeah, he's that good. Like, if you're in Pittsburgh and you're a Penguins fan, even if they're super bad, we saw Sidney Crosby, I want to go watch. I'll spend the $30 on a ticket plus, you know, whatever. I'm
talking
food and stuff, whatever it may be. And then you're getting more money. But if you take Crosby out of that and you don't have, I don't want to talk about this, but if you don't have fucking Gavin McKenna on your team next year, like,
if they get Gavin McKenna, man.
Like,
I can pick the lottery balls myself, and if the Penguins won, I call it rigged still.
There's something where between Lemieux and Crosby, 21 years, get Crosby. Now it's been 21 years since they got Crosby, and Gavin McKenna is going to enter the draft.
Well, another thing that might sound crazy when I say this too is, so like when the Penguins won the draft lottery and they selected Sidney Crosby, he played with Lemieux for a year or two. Like, Lemieux came back to play because he wanted to, like, be a mentor to Sidney Crosby, because he knew how good the kid was going to be, and he wanted to make sure that Crosby lived with Lemieux for a few years. If Pittsburgh doesn't trade Crosby, let's say they end up winning the lottery and drafting McKenna, I can see Crosby doing the exact same thing.
His last year, at least, of his contract, he's doing the same thing with McKenna. And who knows? maybe Crosby's like, fuck it, I'm turning 40. I'll sign a one-year deal, a cheap one, and...
Well, I think Crosby's very loyal, mm-hmm. and I don't think Pittsburgh's trading him unless he specifically asks for a trade.
I do think it is ridiculous that we're talking about the Penguins possibly trading Crosby because just Friedman said, yeah, I totally agree with you, and it's not like
Conversation you have to have because mm-hmm. you just look at the situation the Penguins are in, and you know I'm sure as heartbreaking as it is for like Penguins fans to admit, like you can't fully rebuild unless he's not on your team anymore. It's just the nature of it, and I don't think Sidney Crosby you would accept having a conversation with Kyle Dubas saying, like, yeah, we're blowing it up mm-hmm. because he's very loyal to that organization, to the city. I think I can see him taking maybe getting even an ownership stake or getting some kind of front office role when he retires in Pittsburgh. He's a Penguin for life, as far as I know.
Didn't Lemieux, he bought the Penguins.
He saved them, yeah.
Does he still have any ownership in it?
I think he sold his majority share. I think he still owns a minor share, but he doesn't have controlling power over the Penguins anymore.
Okay. So wait. Was Lemieux like having that ownership share while playing with Crosby? Or you can't do that?
I don't know. I don't know off the top of my head. I know at one point though he was like part of an ownership group and like he had control over the Pittsburgh Penguins organization.
Know that. I just didn't know how long or anything, but yeah. It's so insane.
I think he might have had to like step out of the ownership role when he was playing because I think he had retired for a year, mm-hmm. and then he bought the Penguins went bankrupt, and then they almost got bought by an executive that wanted to move the team to Hamilton, Ontario. The NHL found about that and axed the deal the last second, and then I think Lemieux ended up scooping it and getting the team on a really cheap deal. He made like a shitload of money when he sold his shares of the team, but. Yeah, I could see Sidney Crosby. It's tough, man. Because I'm sure the Penguins don't want to trade him, but the writing's on the wall. And unless you can get Crosby to like commit to like blowing it up, and like he says, like I don't care, I just don't want to be there. Because he said he still wants to win. He still wants to win another mm-hmm. cup, and that's why he's forcing Dubas to make these kinds of moves. And as Dubas, what are you going to tell him? No. It's Sidney Crosby.
If Crosby comes to you and is like, I want to stay competitive, and Dubas is like, no, we're blowing it up with you on the team. Like, you're not going to say that.
Yeah, it's just a really tough situation. Regardless of Sidney Crosby being on the Penguins or not, I'd still be shocked if they traded him. Like, it would be one of the biggest news ever in NHL history, I think. Even trading a 37-year-old Crosby would be, like, crazy news.
Would it be one of the biggest trades in NHL history if they traded Crosby?
Yeah, I think just because it's Sidney Crosby. Like, it doesn't matter if he was 25 when you traded him or 50. It's still Sidney Crosby. The way he's playing, he's still a top 10 player in this league, in my opinion. And it would blow my mind.
I don't know. I don't even know what I think. If I hear the news that Crosby's traded, I'm like so shocked.
Oh, it would be shocking, yeah. It would be a huge story. It would be insane.
So I'm wondering, like, obviously I think that it's more likely he stays on the Penguins than not to finish out the deal. But I think I'm on the train of don't trade Crosby unless he specifically comes to you and is like, I know we're not going to be good for the rest of my contract or the rest of my career. I just want to be traded to a contender. And he just gives him a list of teams.
I mean, if that's Sidney Crosby, something he decides to do, then you have to honor it.
Of course. Yeah. And I think that'd be a situation where not only do you have Dubas in the room, but you also have ownership in the room.
Oh, yeah, that's a top-down organization thing because he's like an icon of that franchise. And before you do anything, it's a really tough situation because even if Sidney Crosby said, I want to be traded, and ownership's like, no, we're not trading you because you're Sidney Crosby and you mean so much to this organization. Like, it could be an ugly situation. We could all be talking about nothing and Crosby just retires as a Penguin and it is what it is.
Yeah.
Because as much as you want to honor Crosby and, you know, he wants to stay competitive, you don't have to.
No.
He's still under contract. He has a full new movement clause and you can ask for a trade. Doesn't mean you have to trade him. It's just a delicate situation, and I think no matter what you do, it's just you're just in a tough spot as an organization.
Yeah. let's hop into some other trade news, not necessarily as unrealistic as the Crosby stuff, but the Devils have been exploring a trade with Dougie Hamilton. The Devils have talked to just several teams potentially looking to move on from the 30-year-old defenseman who has been the backbone of this defense and just team in general, feels like, because whenever he's in the lineup, the team and the power play and the penalty kill and everything on the Devils, it looks so smooth and looks so good. But then when he's out of the lineup, which he's missed the last couple seasons, not as a whole, but when he's missed time.
Oh, they're a completely different team when he doesn't play.
Yeah, I remember, what was it, last Luke Hughes rookie season, so not last season, but the year before, where Dougie Hamilton missed most of the season.
Well, that was last season. He played 20 games.
How much did he play the year before?
82. 22, 23, he played 82 games, 23, 24.
I'm talking about 23, 24, like, yeah, only 2 years ago.
Because, well, I guess. I the next season.
Sorry, that's my whole like writing like.
Yeah, no, you're good. Stuff. Yeah,
okay. But yeah, the 20. I should specify.
Did he break his leg?
Yeah, he did that like early. I think it was like early November, mid November.
Yeah, 20 games into the season. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Luke Hughes had to be thrust in his rookie role, and the Devils didn't look as good. And I think he missed a lot of time just this past season too.
He played 64 games. He played all 5 playoff games as well.
Oh yeah, he got hurt like close to the trade deadline, to miss like a month and came back in time for the playoffs. But the Devils, I mean, granted, they didn't have Jack Hughes, they didn't have Dougie Hamilton, two of their most important players, but it looks like the Devils are possibly going to move on from Dougie Hamilton.
That would be kind of interesting. I wonder what the thought process there is. He does have a $9 million cap hit, so, you know, a big hit. He's getting old. He's had injury issues. But like, I'm just looking at their team buildup and
their future looks.
The only player right now that they have to sign that's going to demand a lot of money is Luke Hughes. He's RFA. They haven't gotten him signed yet. They'll get that done. It's just a matter of when.
I wonder.
They have $6.2 million in cap space right now. Like, at this point, reason I could see them moving on from him is just to clear up cap space.
That could be a thing. I mean, you're not obligated to move off from Dougie Hamilton, but even, 3 years, the next 3 seasons at $9 million, there's a hefty cap too. Even with the cap going up, you'd like to keep Luke Hughes long-term, and that's the plan, clearly. And I think that could be the only holdup, honestly, in getting a new contract, is the just making the money work. And maybe the Devils are talking to Luke Hughes and like, we can do like a 2x6 just to fit you under the cap, and then re-talk next summer to get you signed under a contract extension when the cap goes up. Because, I mean, if you really look at it too, like next season, next offseason, they don't have to sign anybody either, really, that's going to cost a ton of money. So, I mean, you have Simone Nemec, who's not going to cost a ton, who's an RFA
he'll get
next season.
Deal, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that could be a thing too, but it's at least okay to see what the market is for Dougie Hamilton.
I mean, I think if they trade him, they're a worse team, for sure. Because I think Luke Hughes will be the number one defenseman there, but right now, I don't think he is. He's still 21.
I do think that
he just played his second full year in the league. I mean, he was awesome last year, and he's just going to keep getting better. But I don't think, unless they really need to clear cap space to, like, maybe that's the issue with Luke Hughes is, you know, they want to give him like an 8-year contract at like I don't know, 8.5 or $8 million a year, and they just can't get that under the cap right now.
That could very well be an issue, and I'm on that boat now. I think that's 1,000% the issue. I don't think the term's the issue. I think the Devils want to get him under for 8 more years, but the money just isn't working. And I do know that Dougie Hamilton trade right now would open the door for Luke Hughes to become that team's number one defenseman and overall.
But is he ready for the reins?
I don't know if he's ready right now. I'd give it another year or two.
Like, I know he was great last year. He's only 21. He's going into his third full NHL season. It takes time for defensemen to develop.
This is why I would love for them to just do a 2x6 and renegotiate next summer, because I think it's
a summer.
But then
that price keeps going up
That's fine, but I think it's a summer too early to discuss trading Dougie Hamilton. You look at Dougie Hamilton on the ice, like we've talked about, phenomenal for the Devils. He is their leader, their life and blood of that team whenever he's on. So I totally get the Devils' thought process, but he's 32 years old. He can still play hockey at a very high level. I think it's just a summer too early.
I agree with you. I think that's something you maybe kick down the road next year. They might have to move another player or figure out something with Luke Hughes to get him under contract, just under the cap for this year. Because, you know, I think if they got him to like an 8x8.5, I think that would be a great contract. because I think this kid's going to be an elite defenseman, and he's only going to keep getting better. And the longer you wait to give him that big boy contract, the more expensive it's going to be.
The only hold on, I'm going
to
count
for a deal the Sabres gave to Owen Power, or the Senators gave to Jake Sanderson. I think that would be a really good deal for Luke Hughes.
Okay, this is crazy because they have 13 forwards under contract at the moment, which is probably ideal if you're an NHL team, right? If you can't move Dougie Hamilton, which I think would be a stupid idea, and you want to sign Luke Hughes to, let's say, an $8 million contract, for example, you can Stefan Nosen or Noesen, however you pronounce that, at 32 years old, making $2.75 for the next two seasons. Couldn't honestly see if you could move on from that entire deal. You free up enough cap space, get 8x8 done.
He's an important depth player for them, though. He played a lot last year.
Yeah, I know he's important for them, but sometimes you have to make hard decisions, dude.
I get what you're saying. It's just, I'm not sure. I don't think moving Dougie Hamilton right now is the right thing.
It's not the right thing. Yeah. I'm against it. Unless you can get an absolute.
Well, especially last year, where the way the fence boom was just dropping like flies.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think with Dougie Hamilton, they rushed him to get back for the playoffs, and he wasn't 100% in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because Luke Hughes was still like out there, like every other shift, it felt like, in that five-game series.
And then he got hurt,
but he was playing through an injury at the end of the series.
I think, yeah, he had to play through because Brendan Dillon got hurt, and he legitimately, he couldn't skate.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, Luke Hughes is dealing with the shoulder injury. I guess tough it out for the series, but it's an interesting situation. If I'm the Devils, I get clearing up cap space. Just wait. Please just wait. That's just me, though. I'm not in a front office. I say that numerous times, and maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know.
But I mean, they could literally just be exploring, just gauging, see what interest in, maybe what they can get, because you'd also be getting good players back.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like you'd just be, like, dumping a cap hit. Like, he's still a great player, and teams would give up assets to acquire him, like draft picks and, you know, decent players.
Especially a team that not only has the cap, but also could use a true number one defenseman right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Or even a team that has just a bunch of young pieces on the blue line and really want to add that 32, 33-year-old vet defenseman to kind of help shoulder the load a little bit.
Now, he is going to be expensive on a trade. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, even at that $9 million cap hit, still expecting, like, at least one or two, like, decent roster players, draft picks, and a decent prospect for him.
Yeah. I want to hop into my top 10 center list. We're getting to that time of the year where I give my list, and then you react to them, and you tell me how fucking stupid and how I'm an idiot for my list.
I've never called you stupid or idiot.
So this is how it's going to work. So the same thing as last off season, where I just do some honorable mentions that I feel like should be mentioned, that they just missed out on the cut. And I go 10 to 1, and then you tell me what you like, what you don't like, et cetera, what you changed. For centers, honorable mentions, Sebastian Aho and Jack Hughes. I think they just missed out on the list. You could arguably put them both on the list, and I think I know where you're going to go with this already.
Yeah.
Number 10, I have Mark Scheifele. Number 9, Nick Suzuki. Number 8, Braden Point. Number 7, Sidney Crosby. Number 6, Austin Matthews. Number 5, Sasha Barkov. Number 4, Jack Eichel. Number 3, Leon Draisaitl. Number 2, Nathan MacKinnon. And number 1, Connor McDavid.
I mean, your top, like, probably 7, don't really have any issues with. Just, I would probably put Barkov a little higher.
Okay.
I think honestly, even after his 2 Stanley Cups, I still think he's an underrated player. He just does everything, man. He's not going to ever put up, a season like McDavid. He's going to have, like, 120 points or something like that. But he's just such a good two-way center. He's like Anze Kopitar, like the modern Anze Kopitar. Mm-hmm. And I think he's better than Kopitar, honestly.
All time or just like right now?
Right now. I think he has a potential to be better than Kopitar all time.
Potential top 3 two-way, just forward in general of all time.
Like, yeah. He's a lot like Kopitar, a lot like Patrice Bergeron. He's just a sneaky, great player. He just doesn't make mistakes.
And maybe I did put him a little bit too low, but I just look at the other four players and I don't know.
I don't disagree. I mean, all those, like Eichel, Draisaitl, like MacKinnon, those are all guys that are top players in this league. My issue is mainly with 8, 9, and 10. So I think Braden Point is probably, like, I would probably put him at 10.
Okay.
And Nick Suzuki, I think, is a little early to be on a top 10 list. Yeah.
I would
put Sebastian Aho on there above him.
Okay.
For sure, Sebastian Aho. He's another player that he can tend to go a little bit under the radar sometimes, because he's also not going to be a guy that's putting up, like, 100-point seasons. He's more of like a two-way center like Barkov, and he's so important to that Hurricanes team, and he's out there for every big situation, penalty kill, power play, you know, empty net, trying to get a goal, you're down one net. Like, he's so important to that team, and I think he's a better all-around player than Nick Suzuki. Suzuki kind of had a breakout year last year with his offensive game.
But his defense was very good
last year. Oh, he's great. Right? Don't get me wrong. He's top 15. I don't think he's top 10 right now.
I do want to talk about Aho real quick. I completely agree with you on that point. We saw it where there was a couple playoff games where the team needed him to score, and there was one playoff game where he scored like in back-to-back shifts, mm-hmm. and they went up 2-0. So, yeah, Rod Brendamore relies on him a lot, and that's why I have him in the honorable mention, because I feel like he could be in the top 10. Me personally, I think he just missed out, but I see the argument where have him over Nick Suzuki for sure. I don't hate that.
And then, you know, Jack Hughes and Mark Scheifele are interesting too, because I think Mark Scheifele is a great center, but I think Jack Hughes, I'm curious about this. I'm going to ask you this. Mm-hmm. Did Hughes move down a little bit on your list because of like injuries?
Yes, that is
okay.
I love Jack Hughes. For people that listen and watch and yourself, like, I love mm-hmm. Jack Hughes is my guy. But what he did before the injury, great, it was phenomenal.
He was arguably having an MVP season.
Yeah, and he was one of my top five on the leaderboard heading into last season. But maybe he changes my mind a little bit. I want to see him have a full healthy season. Then he'll be right back in my top 10. Love the kid to death, though.
Yeah, I would probably if you're just going up for like last year, then this list is probably fine. But I think just like in a grander scope, like let me try to reorder your list. I think number one, Connor McDavid. You can't really argue about that. I would put Barkov at two
over MacKinnon and Draisaitl.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. I think he's that good, man.
He is phenomenal.
Number three, MacKinnon.
Okay.
At four, I would probably put. I'd have to debate between Draisaitl or Matthews.
You're debating over Draisaitl, dude.
Dude, Matthews is great too.
I love Matthews, but dude, the Draisaitl.
Yeah, I'd probably put Draisaitl at four. At five, Austin Matthews.
Okay.
At six, Jack Eichel. Seven, Sidney Crosby. Eight, I'd probably put Sebastian Aho. Nine, Jack Hughes, and then 10, Braden Point.
I like that list too. Yeah. I like it. Except Barkov at 2. I'm not trying to disrespect him.
He's so good.
I know he is. I'm not trying to disrespect him. He's still clearly a top 5 center in the league, but I think
he's the kind of player you have to watch when he doesn't have the puck.
Oh, I do, for sure. He's great off the puck too. He's just one of the smartest players in the entire league. Maybe I'm underrating him, and I've called him the most underrated player in the league, but I don't know.
Yeah, you know, he's incredible.
He's
the Panthers don't make it to 3 Stanley Cup finals or win back-to-back Stanley Cups without him.
Completely shut down McDavid for the entire finals this past season, too.
Yeah, he just doesn't make mistakes. He's incredible.
No. I want you guys to let me know how my list was. Did you guys already call me a fucking dumbass in the comment section? Whose list is better, mine or Preston? Please let us know down there. That's going to end it for today's episode. If you guys enjoy all of our content, all of our socials are down below, as well as the subscribe button. Thank you guys for being here. We'll see you guys in our next episode.